You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
Good morning and welcome. Nice to be back with you Sunday morning as we talk real estate, and we do that for Waters Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. Now, that is absolute waterfront luxury from just $875,000. More about that later in the show, 7:30. What's on for this morning? Well, Tasmania currently heads up the list of Australia's most in-demand property markets. Now, if you're a bit surprised about that, well, you're not alone. I was, that's for sure. We'll find out a little bit more about that and the state of the market and the expectations for 2017 with Nerida Connorsby. You'll join me a little bit later in the show. Plus, we're going to hear more about a new buying strategy that cash-poor first home buyers are utilising, and we'll find out whether or not it's good for you, what are the pros and cons, whether the pros outweigh the cons, and whether it's a disaster just waiting to happen. So a lot to get through this morning. But you might recall over the last month or two, we've been talking about a tiny home revolution. Now, if you turn on the television, a lot of the lifestyle channels are talking about tiny homes, as they have been in the States and through Canada for many, many years. But we're seeing it very much as a growing trend in Australia. And there was a recent story that I want to pick up on now about a Brisbane couple who did exactly that and then found that they fell foul with the Brisbane City Council. But there has been a good resolution. To bring us up to date on this, Lara Noble joins us. Lara has been on the show before. Good morning, Lara. Thanks again for your time Sunday morning. It's nice to talk to you.
Oh, good morning.
We're going to talk about tiny homes. It's been a while since we last spoke to you. What we know about you is that you are an architect. You turned carpenter.
Graduate architect.
My apologies. Passion for tiny homes. And now you found yourself in a battle with the Brisbane City Council. But you were victorious. Tell us what happened.
Well, we've set up our tiny house in inner city Brisbane, and we were living in it. And we'd checked the rules before we'd set it up, and we believed we were well within the regulations, mm-hmm. doing what we were doing and the way we were doing it.
Yeah.
And we were reported to council from someone who thought building activity was going on when we set it up. So we were issued an enforcement notice, and we followed up on this with a letter explaining that we've met all the rules that we could lay our hands on, and we'd checked with the appropriate people and done this respectfully. And
it must have come as somewhat of an awful surprise. We will be catching up in just a moment with Valerie, who I understand helped you through this process. We'll get a bit more detail there. But that must have come as a bit of an awful surprise to you when that happened.
Yes and no, in the sense that we had checked everything that we could, but it was also a bit of a grey area. So we weren't sure how the council would react. We were shocked to get an enforcement notice so quickly.
What does an enforcement notice mean? What does that?
It just means that Brisbane City Council had sent an inspector around, because there's a show cause notice, which is the first one to say, please explain yourself.
Yes.
And then we explained what we thought, and then they decided that no, it doesn't fit, and they were classing it as a 1A built fixed structure. Mm. So it would be like building a granny flat without any permits.
Yeah.
Which is not on.
Had you spoken to Brisbane City Council in the lead up to any of this?
Yes, definitely, 3 or 4 times.
Wow.
But we hadn't spoken to anyone who could give us a definitive answer on our particular situation.
Yeah.
Because it's a grey zone. It's a new type of building, a type of caravan, I guess.
Yeah. Now, Lara, your love of tiny homes went a lot deeper than you just having your own, because you've got your own company called the Tiny House Company, is that right?
Yes, with Andrew and Greg.
Yeah.
We've been building a few other tiny houses in Brisbane.
Did this experience dampen your enthusiasm for it, or did it fire you up more?
It was sort of, I guess the best way to say it, it was a hurdle that we had to sort of, we had to be the guinea pig for this, because if we're building houses, people want some definite answers, you know?
Yes.
And it was too much of a grey zone. Even we were like, oh, we don't know how they're going to respond to this type of a movable home because of the way we've set it up, because of what it looks like.
Yeah, because but, we hear from Brisbane City Council, well, a lot of the councils really are looking for a lot more infill. Therefore, you'd think they'd be encouraging this type of activity. I guess there's got to be some restrictions on it. But
Well, they are. It's pretty great. Like, the outcome's been really great. And the council's been really, really great to deal with in a way. We had this, after the enforcement notice, we had this appeal process, which was on the deck of the tiny house. And there were 12 of us, I think,
really?
Crowded on the deck. Yeah, so it was sort of like an informal informal hearing.
Yes.
And it was fantastic. Brisbane City Council were amazing. They were supportive, they were encouraging, and we've got more work to do, I guess, with guidelines and recognising this form of housing. So it was a very positive process, and we were allowed to...
Yeah, is this just the Brisbane City Council, do you think, setting down the parameters, going through this exercise to work out what they need to do to make sure that it's fairly well ironclad?
Yeah, I think they were forced into that situation because leading up to it, they were in a bit of a grey zone. So I think that now, yes, they will hopefully be able to be on the same page and work together with them or other people, more experts, to be honest. Be able to work with them and come up with some of the people is really clear and easy for people to execute. But it's been a really positive process, I want to say, because it hasn't really been like an us and them. Like, since their first inspection, they're like, wow, okay, this is unique, this is cool. The reason we got issued the enforcement notice was because they really didn't know how to define it, and that's why they tried to define it as a fixed building, which it really isn't.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why the ruling changed.
Yeah. Now, tell me about the tiny house company. Where to from here? You mentioned earlier in our chat that you're doing a number of these tiny homes around Brisbane. How's that progressing?
Good. We haven't built a number around Brisbane. We've moved this one a couple of times. So the one that we're living in has moved 9 times.
Wow.
It's mostly on display or showing people through. There's a lot of interest. So we're kind of yet to see how it's unfolding because it's a pretty new industry. There's a lot of stuff on TV and a lot of people interested.
That's right.
Which is great.
So I guess maybe we can talk to Valerie, who's going to be our next guest, about some of the restrictions in this area. But what does it cost for someone to get a tiny home?
We're building they're all on wheels. They're built on a good quality trailer base, so you can hitch them up and go. So we've got some designs for tiny houses the same size as ours for 80,000 complete, up to whatever people want to spend to set it up. Like,
and well, what's the how many bedrooms are in these, Lara?
Well, the way we've designed them, there's not really a bedroom, so to speak. It's a mixed use space. So ours, the bed lowers down from the ceiling above the lounge space.
Okay.
So it's on a remote and it comes down. So at night you lower the bed and during the day you lift it up and you can use it as a lounge room.
But you've got to be very creative with space, don't you? We're going to have to move on, but how do we get in touch with you, Lara? What's the website?
www.tinyhousecompany.com.au.
Pretty easy. Tinyhousecompany.com.au. Good on you, Lara. All the best and thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, let's get a little bit more detail on this. We'll go a little bit deeper because Valerie Barres from ESC Consulting actually worked with Lara on this and she joins us. Good morning, Valerie. Thanks for your time this morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
Let's get into some of the do's and don'ts, I guess, about this. Tell us a little bit about your role in this and how you helped Lara with the Brisbane City Council. What was the process?
So we met Lara and Andrew through a friend of a friend, and we heard about their story. They were at the point where they had replied to the show cause notice from the council and had received the enforcement notice back saying, well, thanks very much, but no, you still need a building permit. At that point, Lara and Andrew had kind of lost hope, I think, a little bit. With my business partner, Ricky, we decided that we could give this a go. We could, that there had to be a way through in showing that this was not a fixed structure as the council was claiming.
Okay, so it wasn't fixed because it was, as I understand from just talking to Lara, then it's on wheels or it's easily transportable. Was that the big difference?
There were a couple of factors, but that was definitely one of them. So we were able to demonstrate that the tiny house on wheels is actually fits the definition of a movable dwelling, and there is a definition. It's not in the Building Act, which was what the council was using. It's in another piece of legislation, but it fits that definition. And obviously, the key factor there is that it is on a road registered trailer. But there were also things like the fact that it could be easily packed up and moved off the site, that Lara and Andrew owned the tiny house, but they didn't own the land that it was on. So it created that, it broke that link, that permanency link between the dwelling and the land.
Yeah. Valerie, what about plumbing and things like this, sewage? Does that need to be connected?
Yeah, so Lara and Andrew have a composting toilet on in their tiny house,
yep.
Which all that it requires is a drainage pipe buried into the ground. The Dispute Resolution Committee did ask for some additional information about that, which we provided, and they were happy that it could be easily disconnected. You just have to pull the pipe out of the ground, basically,
okay.
Pack it up and off you go.
What about things like water? Did the council have to supply water?
So the water is and electricity is essentially just a electrical extension cord plugged into the main house on the lot.
Yeah.
And same with the water. It's just a garden hose connected to the tap.
Mm.
Again, easily just, you unplug, you roll it away, roll it up and off you go.
So what's to stop? Is this like a larger version of a caravan, is it?
Correct.
So what's to stop someone just putting a caravan in their backyard? Are there any restrictions about that?
No. So the only requirement that Brisbane City Council has on living in a caravan in a backyard was that it was permissible. The only thing is, as long as it didn't cause any public nuisance and as long as the occupants had access to a toilet. That was the only regulation that they had.
What about boundary from, how close it can be to the boundary? Were there any restrictions on that or even the size of it?
No, they had no restrictions at all, which is why I think the outcome of this appeal has really made them have a hard look at all of that for them at the moment.
It's probably been a good exercise for the council to go through to maybe look at an area that they've never had to face before, which is a lot more infill, and how we go about doing that, Valerie.
Yes, absolutely. The new state SEQ regional plan actually looks at infill by, housing that could be provided by the tiny houses on wheels as a real option. So we've got high hopes that this sort of housing is going to become much more accessible and affordable, and that Brisbane City Council will certainly, have some appropriate regulation for allowing that sort of thing to happen now.
So has there been a change in name for these things? Like these are definitely movable, so they're transportable.
Yep.
But there are some others where the council do have restrictions on size and a requirement for plumbing and so on. As an example, we build a small studio at our property.
Yeah.
Where we do a lot of audio and video production, but we were restricted on size because it's actually on stumps. It's not transportable.
Yep.
So
yep.
Is that the difference? Because this is, you can actually hook it up to a car and drive it away.
Yes, that's right. So we would, it has no permanent connection to the land.
Okay. What about height restrictions? Because I've seen on some of these television shows, and we talked to Lara about that, over some of these television shows, they're almost like they have a little mezzanine floor on the inside. So can you do that with these as well?
Yes. So Lara and Andrew have a little mezzanine floor. I think the only restriction in there is in terms of the headspace within the caravan. I guess, if you want it to be transportable, you can't make it too high.
Mm.
So it just comes down to how you use the space.
Now, your company, ESC Consulting, as I said, you worked with Lara and Andrew on getting this resolution with the Brisbane City Council. Are you seeing an increase in this, a need for people to get more affordable housing or more infill into areas?
Definitely. Yes, definitely. Young people these days are just struggling to be able to raise the funds to, put a deposit on the house. It's just too expensive. And I think that, young people these days probably would prefer the flexibility of having their own house, which they can move around as they find work. And obviously the difficulty is just finding, a block of land to put it on. But I think a lot of people would be open to that.
Mm. So where can someone get a bit more information about this? Is it best to go to the Brisbane City Council website, or is there another website you'd recommend?
In terms of
setting up
a tiny house?
Yeah, exactly.
Look, I don't think there is actually any information anywhere on that at the moment. It's actually something we're working on ourselves, where we're looking to develop a bit of a set of guidelines which would help people look at all the things they need to consider when setting up a tiny house.
Mm.
And obviously we would like to work with Brisbane City Council in terms of whatever regulation they're going to come up with to make sure that this stays open as an option for new homeowners.
And they're quite supportive in this whole exercise, Valerie, are they, Brisbane City Council?
The information we have at the moment is that they're reviewing those regulations. We don't know as yet what it's going to look like, but I think the pressures in terms of growing population,
the
requirement to do infill housing, they're just going to have to go that way.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess a good place to start would be at Lara's website, which we mentioned, tinyhousecompany.com.au.
Yep.
And maybe they could contact you as well. What's your website?
It is escconsulting.com.au.
Once again, nice and easy. escconsulting.com.au. And yep. your area of expertise, Valerie, is in this, is it? Resolution with councils?
Not quite. We're environmental planners. We're into sustainability, and we also provide community services.
Right.
So it's all within that mix.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, Valerie. The website again is escconsulting.com.au. And if you want to get a bit more detail and contact Lara or Andrew, that is it's tinyhousecompany.com.au. Well, I appreciate your time, Valerie. Thank you for joining us Sunday morning.
Thank you.
It's coming up to 25 past 7. Yeah, it's interesting. We're going to see more and more this need for us to get some resolution about more affordable housing. And we talked there about young people getting in and how difficult it is for them. We'll touch on that in just a moment too. But it's also an opportunity. We've talked about granny flats, and this is where, once you call it a granny flat, that's when you come into the restrictions of it needs to be plumbed in, it needs to be a permanent fixture, so therefore there are only certain size blocks of land you can do granny flats on. There are restrictions on setbacks and so on. So this could be a good, interesting resolution, but I guess the council would be concerned about anyone just thinking that they can just pull up a caravan in their backyard. And as it would appear, there are no restrictions on you doing that. But we'll follow this story, and you might want to get a bit more information too. If you've got any thoughts on this, 13 13 32.
You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
And we talk real estate for Water's Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. Absolute waterfront luxury and just $875,000. Check it out for yourself. Coming up to 25 minutes to 8, we'll have more news at 8 o'clock this morning. Congratulations to Rita Joyce, who takes away that double pass to see the film of her choice at Event Cinemas. And you can take whoever you like, Rita. So there you go. Congratulations and Merry Christmas to you too. And thanks to Event Cinemas. You can book online at eventcinemas.com.au for the biggest action on the big screen. See it all at Event Cinemas. Well, I mentioned at the start of the show about Tasmania, little old Tasmania, how it's the most in-demand market in Australia. I was surprised. You probably might have been too. But maybe Nerida Connersby, who was the chief economist from REA, well, maybe she wasn't surprised. Good morning, Nerida.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good. Were you surprised about that?
Oh, look, it's been happening a while. Tasmania has been shooting up in popularity. So we measure popularity based on the number of people looking to buy property on our realestate.com.au site,
yes,
and compare that to the number of people wanting to sell. And Tasmania's been shooting up in popularity, but I think it is because of affordability.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Tasmania is the most affordable state in Australia. And, you know, with people, you know, wanting to buy but being priced out of many markets, it really shows that, you know, how severe that problem is.
And if we look at how popular it is and the demand levels there, what are the stock levels like, Nerida? Can they meet that demand?
No, they haven't been able to. And pretty much nationally, we have had that problem. While demand has been rising rapidly for housing across Australia, we have had a reduction in stock levels. So that's been happening up until about mid-November. But what is good news is that we have started to see stock levels rise in the second half of November and early December. So I think it's going to moderate, and certainly demand started to moderate in November. And I do think that will continue, that we will start to see more stock into the market and satisfy that demand.
Looking broadly across the country, should we be concerned about demand levels slowing a little bit?
Not yet, but I do think that the decision by banks to start moving interest rates up, independent of the Reserve Bank, will start to moderate that level of demand. So, you know, when we had a look at finance figures for October, we continued to see a rise in investor lending. Owner-occupier lending dropped. I think that will be reversed in November, and I think we're really going to start to see those restrictions to lending cut in, particularly for investors.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, you make a very good point there too, Nerida, and that is that we focus a lot on what the RBA do every month when they have their meeting, but really it's more important as to what the banks do, and they actually have a stronger lever over demand and supply and even prices in how they regulate interest rates, more so than the RBA.
Absolutely, and I think it's going to become more the case next year. With the RBA unlikely to increase rates, I think, you know, we're looking at either a stabilisation or even a cut with those latest GDP figures coming in. I think that the banks will increasingly control what happens in the market. And, you know, obviously they're not going to raise rates to such an extent that they restrict lending and people can't borrow, but they do control the amount of lending, and that will continue next year.
Yeah, West Australia and Northern Territory, they've had a pretty tough time this year. How do they fare? How are they faring right now?
Yeah, look, it's still not great in both of those states. I mean, it's interesting that they increased a little bit in demand in November. Western Australia is interesting, though, because although prices are dropping, although demand, you know, pretty low across the state, we are starting to see some positivity in that market, and particularly those, you know, really premium suburbs are starting to see quite strong growth. So, you know, places like Peppermint Grove are increasing in excess of 14% in prices over the past 12 months. So, you know, I think there's a little people looking to upgrade. We saw also an increase in listings over the last couple of weeks in Perth as well. So, you know, people are confident to sell, which is also a good sign in the market. But, you know, slow going, but, you know, I think that market is starting to turn, but very, very slowly.
Yeah. What do you see ahead for 2017? Where do you see the property market being this time next year?
Oh, I mean, it's really hard to tell. Look, and I think it will depend a lot on what happens with economic growth in Australia and also what happens with global economic growth. So we do have, you know, obviously a new president in the US. You know, can Trump continue that solid run of economic growth that the US has had? You know, what will happen with Brexit? What will happen with, you know, the instability in Europe? So all of that will feed into our own economic growth. Property does remain a relatively stable asset class. And I think, you know, you only have to look at alternative investments and particularly the share market and the volatility in the share market. It does make people increasingly want to buy property because of that relative stability of return. So, you know, I think it is hard to tell. I think Sydney, Melbourne will continue to do well. I don't think they'll still experience the same level of price growth as we've seen. I doubt we'll see that sort of 10 to 12% price growth on average in those cities. Brisbane, you know, I think will continue to sort of move ahead and continue to do well. And hopefully we'll have a bit of a turning around in the Perth market in particular that we'll see those early signs of growth continue, and we'll continue to see prices return to more normal level of growth.
Yeah, it's always good at this time of year too to look back a little bit on the past year. The increases in Sydney and Melbourne, have been truly spectacular again this year. But I think if we were talking to you this time last year, we wouldn't have thought that we'd see that kind of growth continue in Sydney and Melbourne. Was that a surprise for you?
Look, it was. And I think up until about June, things were kind of tracking along as to where people expected. But then we had those two interest rate cuts and it really fueled demand again in both those cities. So, we can't underestimate how highly correlated Australian property, particularly at the moment in Melbourne and Sydney, is to interest rate reductions and, and also the instability that I mentioned before in share prices and also global economic growth really continues to make property a relatively safe investment class.
Mm. Nerida, great talking to you as it always is. Nerida Connorsby is the Chief Economist at REA Group from realestate.com.au. Thanks for your time, Nerida. All the best for Christmas and the New Year too, if I don't get a chance to talk to you before the end of the year.
You too, Kevin. Have a great Christmas.
Thank you very much. It's coming up to 8:30 at 4BC. Going to talk in a moment about energy rating, and I just wonder how you feel about that, because the energy rating we're hearing, and we're hearing from one of the major portals, that's probably an indicator for people as to whether they're interested in buying a property. They're more attuned to what the energy rating is. So there's one website, we'll tell you about in a moment, that is actually looking at energy rating and putting that on every one of their listings.
You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
Well, more and more we're hearing about energy efficiency and how important it is in the property market, whether or not it adds value to your property. I guess over time we're really going to find out. Interesting to note that realestate.com.au has included energy efficiency rating of all houses on their site. Joining me to talk about that, Executive Manager of REA's Search and Web, Johnny Cusson. Johnny, thank you very much for your time. This was it would be a major undertaking to get this, and I would imagine it's just going to build over time, is it?
Yeah, correct. We've actually been working quietly in the background on this for about 12 months. So just, tuning our computer models and that sort of thing to get at at least our first cut of an energy score for every property in the country.
So what is an energy score, and how do you go about achieving that?
Yeah, so the way we've gone about it in the first instance is to look at a property, where it's located, which way it faces, so the orientation, its elevation, all those sorts of geographical components, and then also looking at the configuration of the property, how many rooms it has, what the footprint of the property, the building looks like, to then use modelling to at least give the first estimate of what the energy consumption looks like. We then provide some tools where people can add in additional configuration to the property, things like double glazing, that sort of thing. Have they got some energy efficiency additions to the property that will then give them a more refined view? And that refined view tries to estimate where the energy is being consumed. So is it being consumed on heating or cooling or on appliances, that sort of thing.
Because these ratings are only ever as good as the amount of information that goes in to help you get that rating. So therefore, you're going to rely, I guess, on a lot on the real estate agents and even property owners going in and updating their files, Johnny.
Correct, exactly right. So our first estimate is just that. It's a very broad estimate based on those sort of geographical drivers as well as the property configuration. But the more accurate estimate comes in when someone actually interacts with the tool and provides a better view of how the property is configured.
Have you got a handle on how many properties you believe so far in Australia you might have a fairly accurate reading on?
Yeah, look, I mean, we've only really had this live in market for a month maybe. I'm trying to think of exactly where we put it. So it's very early days, and we're also running it in a sort of a low traffic area of our site just to get some early feedback. Even under those situations, though, or under that sort of setup, we're seeing many thousands of users interacting with it. So, so we're early stages, and it's very much, you know, an early effort in the space. But we intend to follow through on this and build out a more accurate model over time.
Yeah, well, if anyone's been shopping for a refrigerator in recent times, or any major appliances, we have been. Those star ratings that you can get on the front of them are actually very handy, and they're having a lot more meaning now. Is that how it's going to work? Something like a star rating?
Yeah, we've actually avoided the star ratings for a couple of reasons. We're not a regulator in the space. We're obviously a commercial business, and so we didn't want to step on the toes from a personal perspective, I'd love to see governments in the country actually start to look at this space. In the UK, they actually mandate that any property that's bought or sold provides a certificate that actually, with a carefully calibrated energy score, consumption score, and they use a star rating in that context.
Are you finding that this is becoming more of a demand for buyers, that they need this information? And will it, in fact, impact on the price of property, do you think?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, it's one of these chicken and egg things. Because the information hasn't really been available in a standardised way, consumers actually haven't had a way to benchmark one property versus another. That said, you know, consumers, we do know when they go to inspect a property, they'll be paying attention to the things that indicate what the energy consumption might be like.
Yes.
So, you know, we know that property seekers will look at things like solar, things like double glazing, how the property's insulated, that sort of thing. And also, you know, year of construction. So newer constructions in Australia, or, you know, in most jurisdictions, require, you know, certain levels of energy efficiency. So newer properties, you know, you have a higher expectation that they're going to be energy efficient.
Yes, indeed.
Anyone
wanting to update their record or check what their rating is on their own property, just do it through the website, realestate.com.au?
Yeah, and if you add /property on the end of it, you'll be able to get straight to the property you're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you then sign in, you can configure the energy score with the specifics of the property you're interested in.
Pretty much claim that property as your own, do you?
Yep. You can, if you like, or just interact with the tool if it's not your own property.
Okay.
You're interested in another property.
All right. The website, again, is realestate.com.au/property. My guest has been Johnny Carson. Johnny, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Real Estate on 4BC. Make the move to Water's Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. It's absolute waterfront luxury from just $875,000.
And we're coming towards the end of the show. We've got more news coming up at 8 o'clock this morning. I was reading an interesting article about the housing market. In particular, there's a lot of talk about how difficult it is to get into the housing market right now. And I guess you can't really be blamed for being a little bit confused. One minute, we're told that there's an apartment glut and that house prices could crash any minute. The next, our leaders are calling for negative gearing changes that will push prices down even further. So are we really headed for a housing Armageddon or not? That's the question that many, many people are asking. Louis Christopher from SQM Research has written a piece about this. He says that housing prices have been rising for over a decade and warns about a property bubble that's been brewing for years. Now, one of the latest warnings came from Louis from SQM Research, who said that national property market prices were overvalued by 22%. It's a big call. This is being driven by prices in Melbourne and even in Sydney. Melbourne, of course, hit the highest overvaluation level of 40% than Sydney, which was its second highest level of overvaluation at 40%. This is according to Christopher. He warned that if changes weren't made, such as lifting interest rates or tougher restrictions on home lending, prices in Sydney and Melbourne would continue to rise by up to 16% in 2017. These are big statements, and they're actually quite concerning, because this actually sort of adds to that confusion. Talking to Nerida Connorsby from REA just a few moments ago, And she was making the point then that interest rates really are a big lever nowadays in consumer confidence, what happens with prices. And the banks are now starting to move independently of the RBA. So if they continue to do that, and they do that through 2017, that's certainly going to pour a bit of cool water on the market. So we'll continue to look at this over the next few weeks as we head towards the end of the year. We'll look at what the ramifications are in the industry and what these levers can mean.
You're listening to Real Estate with Kevin Turner on News Talk 4BC.
And that's where we're going to go for today. Thank you very much for your company. We're going to be back again next Saturday and Sunday between 7 and 8 as we talk real estate. We're going to go right through Christmas and New Year too. Yeah, no rest for the wicked. Thanks to Ashley who helped out this morning and always does a great job too. Of course, we talk real estate every Saturday and Sunday morning for Water's Edge Apartments on the Redcliffe Peninsula. And don't forget they're 90% sold out. Absolute waterfront luxury from $875,000. All the best for the rest of today. Catch you again tomorrow morning. Not tomorrow morning. Saturday and Sunday morning between 7 and 8. See you then.